Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
All right, here we go on a Tuesday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you for the next 4 hours. Here's what's coming up today. So Andy Reid's going to speak around 11:45. We did not hear him yesterday with the schedule shifted around. I'll be honest, I don't know how much we're going to learn about Patrick Mahomes, but we'll be listening with you guys as well at 11:45. Plus, maybe he speaks on the left tackle position. There's a lot of questions out there, and we'll all find out if we get any answers at 11:45 right here on your home for the Chiefs, 96.5 The Fan. We're also a half hour away from being joined by our NFL insider, Vinny Pasquantino, who I believe was celebrating his wedding anniversary this past weekend.
Is that what was going on?
I think he's been jet setting. I think it was his wedding anniversary. He was at Bobby Wood Jr.'s wedding. So we need to get the scoop. We got to get the scoop, and we'll, of course, talk some NFL.
Maybe he's a big Christmas guy, because I saw what appeared to be a video of them on a sleigh ride through the snowy mountains.
It looked awesome. How romantic, he's with his wife, and they're getting, there's basically, you know, they're going through the mountains.
Did she plan it or did he?
It doesn't matter.
No, but I'm curious.
Yeah.
Like, I'm curious for my sake. Like, am I not living up to, do I need to be planning snowy sleigh rides through the mountains?
It looked pretty badass, I must say. And it's probably like a very romantic thing. Yeah, I'm sure they had blankets and they're all snuggled up and going through the mountains and the sleigh ride. Yeah, I'm sure it was great.
We'll ask Vinny about that at 10:30. Obviously, I'm curious. But yeah, he's also got some NFL takes, I'm sure we'll get to as well.
All right, let's talk about, though, this wide receiver room right now for Kansas City. Most of the conversation has been about, DeAndre Hopkins and what he has done. But we were going through what the rookies have done across the NFL this year at the wide receiver position, and especially because so much of the conversation last night, if you watched at all any of the two crappy games that were going on, Brock Bowers and what he's done, and he's leading all rookie receivers. Also, you had Aroma Dunze for the Bears, who started to play some better football as of late, and it got us thinking more about Xavier Worthy and how he stacks up there. But when you think about how this offense now is moving the football, when they do move the football, obviously, which is not frequently at this point in time.
At this moment, not often.
Xavier Worthy's become like the huge focus and basically the biggest piece at the last couple weeks.
I'll be honest. I think Xavier Worthy is the Chiefs' best wide receiver. And I know you're going to be like, but DeAndre Hopkins has been around this league a long ass time. And he was obviously a very good addition. And I'm not knocking that ad by the Chiefs. Xavier Worthy is their best wide receiver, and the Chiefs know it. The Chiefs know it because since the Bills game, yep. Who has been the number one most targeted wide receiver on the Chiefs? Xavier Worthy. Who has been the man who's been the most consistent in the wide receiver unit since that time? Xavier Worthy. Xavier Worthy, over those last five games, is on an 850-yard, 17-game pace. Now, look, that's still not 1,200 yards or anything else in between or some of these, like, numbers that would make it beyond. But an 850-yard pace with a couple of touchdowns, and he's getting targeted 5, 6, 7 times per game. They know he's their best wide receiver. And one of the biggest reasons why is he can get open.
Yeah, that's
Hopkins is the best catch guy, but Hopkins can't separate the way Xavier Worthy can.
And that's the difference. DeAndre Hopkins is still the better all-around wide receiver, but Xavier Worthy is the only guy, until maybe Hollywood Brown, will find out on Saturday if Brown plays, that can consistently get open and now is starting to clearly learn more of the route tree, hopefully getting more comfortable out there. And that's the matchup mess that he creates for opponents. And that's why I think we've seen the target share go up. And it hasn't been the deep shots recently. They've kind of adjusted what, you know, early in the season, the only chance he was getting was going deep and they weren't connecting. Now you're starting to see drag routes. You're starting to see underneath stuff, kind of what we saw Rashee Rice do a year ago. I'll be curious once Brown is back, how that impacts what Xavier Worthy does in this offense. So I don't totally disagree with you. Like, best wide receiver, he's the most explosive wide receiver. He's the biggest matchup nightmare for opponents. Is he the best wide receiver? I don't know. DeAndre Hopkins still, nobody makes better contested catches. Nobody is consistently able to make the catch when you have to have it. That's still him. But I totally get what you're saying. Now, if we want to look at how we should be viewing Worthy's rookie year, I think if you're disappointed in what he's been doing, I don't know. You know, did you expect him to have 1,000 yards his rookie year? Because he's seventh among all receivers, rookie receivers this year. And if you take Brock Bowers, the tight end, out of it, who leads all rookie receivers, then he's sixth in the NFL out of the rookie class. And we know they've missed on some deep passes. So, like, if you're just going to say you want him to connect on those, sure. All of a sudden, he's probably a 750-yard receiver. He's got double the touchdowns as Rome Odunze as well. So, who's sixth? I don't think it's been a bad rookie year at all. I think this has been really promising. And you mentioned the Buffalo game, week 11. Since then, he's going on that, I'll call it kind of the second half run that we were hoping to see and that Rashee Rice had. His numbers in the uptick is not much different than what we saw Rashee Rice do in the back half of last year.
No, he just started having 80, 90 yards a game instead of 50, 60 yards a game, which is what we're seeing right now to Xavier Worthy. But that could be simply boiled down to one thing. It would be 80 yards a game if he would just get once every other game, once every third game, one of those long passes that had been thrown his way. He had another one in which he was open in the previous game. Patrick Mahomes overthrew him by 7 to 10 yards. But it was open once again. So if those passes start getting completed just every once in a while, well, then he is a 1,000-yard receiver, and I can see a 1,000-yard receiver there. Look, if you want to make this a long-term conversation, I feel even better. Because then I know, starting week 5, 6, how long do we think Rashee Rice is going to be out next year?
Well, health-wise, I think he'll be available. You know, the suspension part is the big question. So okay. I'll say mid-October.
So let's just say he's available week 1 from a health perspective. But then, yeah, it's mid-October before he comes back. Well, then a wide receiver unit in which they fully established Xavier Worthy as a real weapon and Rashee Rice is on the other side. Look, then you don't even have to worry about do we have to bring back DeAndre Hopkins? Do we need a one-year deal with Hollywood Brown? You can explore those deals, but they're not the make or break for the wide receiver unit, depending on what you get out of him. Xavier Worthy has shown to me, I think he's their most talented wide receiver. I think he's their best wide receiver. And I think the rest of the way, if you made me guess from this week until the end of the postseason, who is the number one yardage getter for the Chiefs at wide receiver, I think it's Xavier Worthy. Like, I think it's Xavier Worthy. Like, I don't know if that's who you would pick, but that's what I think we're seeing in Xavier Worthy, is that they think he's their number one target.
Well, target share wise, that's where he's been. That is where he's been at the last couple weeks. I think that, again, there's a difference between that and like best wide receiver. If we're just talking about who can get the most separation right now in the wide receiver room, yeah, it's absolutely Xavier Worthy. I still think on a key third down, got to have a catch, Cody.
Yeah,
it's Kelsey
fair.
And it's D-Hop first.
Yeah.
And that's just the veteran. Fine. That's just the veteran.
And it'll be Rashee Rice next year. It doesn't need to be Worthy ever, honestly. For sure. There's other people doing that job.
But, you know, Xavier Worthy by no means has had a bad, anybody saying he's had a bad rookie season, they're just not paying attention. It's not been a bad rookie season at all. And by the time we get another three games in, all of a sudden you watch Worthy's going to finish right around the range where I think a lot of people thought he could be, 600, 700 yards.
It's like we've been skewed a little bit because obviously different wide receivers do different things. He was taken in the lower part of the first round. He's supposed to be a viable player, but like this is a far more, you can tell when guys are going to be productive a lot earlier. This is far more productive than Sky Moore ever was. This is far more productive.
Sure, we knew that pretty early on.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, that was evident early on. But also what I don't think we should do, though, is let's say Worthy finishes with 700. Next year, though, if you're like, oh, he's got to be a 1,300-yard receiver, that's also just a crazy expectation. No, next year I would like, then the next step is, can he be a 900 to 1,000? Can he be an 850 to 1,000? I get... He was a first-round pick, and we want him to be the next Justin Jefferson. We want him to be the next Devonta Smith and all that. Like I understand, but next year, I guess, are we already setting the table where if I tell you he's going to have 1,000 yards, you're not going to think that's good enough? Like I, That's my only thing. We shouldn't assume that next year because he had a 700 that he's just going to double his production next year. It doesn't work that way.
I'll be honest. Devonta Smith is exactly who I want him to turn into, and that is not a crazy number. That is, he was a 1,000-yard receiver last year, or he's a 1,200-yard receiver last year. That was a little high. 1,000-yard receiver the year before, and he'll probably be a barely over 1,000-yard receiver this year. He's got 916 now and 5 touchdowns. The dream scenario for me, based on the trajectory that Rashee Rice showed for a few games this year, is that they're A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith. But I'll take 90% of both of them. Does that make sense? Because that's what it feels like it's heading towards. Devonta Smith in his rookie year, by the way, finished with 56 catches for 662 yards and 6 touchdowns.
Very close to what we're probably going to see from Worthy.
Dangerously close. So when we start talking about Xavier Worthy next year and the leap I want to see, I'd like to see him become a 900 to 1,000-yard wide receiver.
As long as that's where we're at, I'm just saying.
I'm not trying to turn him into 1,500-yard Jamar Chase next year.
Yeah.
But although in fairness, my expectations for Rashee Rice got really high before the season, as you remember. Like, I thought he should be an 1,100-yard receiver. And then I watched him for a few games, and I'm like, I might have sold him short.
Yeah, the tricky thing with him.
Because now the injury.
The tricky thing with him will be coming back from an injury, being it'll be over a year since he last played a snap by the time. That's a next year problem. That's a next year conversation.
Yeah, but like when you look at Xavier Worthy right now, I think there's a pretty good chance he's the player who's going to surprise these teams come postseason time. Because you're going to be like, man, I knew you had a good receiver in Xavier Worthy. But yeah, he doesn't rank up there with what Thomas and Neighbors and McConkie and Harrison Jr. have done. But to be honest, all of those guys but Ladd McConkie are losers. Bowers, they don't have anyone else to throw to. Thomas, they don't have anybody else to throw to. And some of those numbers become inflated.
Yeah, their teams are losers. Yeah.
Yeah, they're great receivers, and they'll probably be better receivers than Xavier Worthy is in his career base, for all I know. But a lot of those guys are getting as many catches and yardage because they got anyone else to throw to, okay? That's it. The only person they're throwing to in New York is Malik Neighbors, who is a great wide receiver and I'm sure will continue to be. The only miss, I would say, is like if you made me redraft and the Chiefs had to pick at the exact same spot. They don't get to just go up and take Bowers or Thomas or whatever. And they had to pick at the exact same spot. The only one you'd find me trying to switch is McConkey. That's the only one where I'd be like, what if we did a little swap? Because I see how he fits the Chiefs' offense. Outside of that, I feel really good where Worthy's headed. But I also just feel good about it this year. This is not like a just long-term thing. I think he's an important player for them this year now. It just took him, like it always does, 10 weeks before they figured it out.
Yeah. Do I think that having him and Brown on the field at the same time is going to solve every problem? No.
No.
But I'm very intrigued about what does that do. Of course, it's going to make them better on offense. To what extent? I have no idea. It's going to depend truly on how they utilize Brown and where is he at. By all accounts and reports that are out there, Hollywood Brown is in incredible shape and state condition and all that, but what's the timing like and how many snaps is he getting? Can they get him ramped up by the divisional round or whatever of the postseason? That's all stuff that is going to be figured out over the next couple of weeks. We'll talk about this more later on today as well. Nate Taylor from The Athletic going to join us in the 11 o'clock hour, right around 11 o'clock earlier today because the schedule shifted around. So normally a 1 o'clock hour visit from Nate, he'll actually call into the show at 11. But let's talk about Clyde Edwards-Helaire for a little bit. You guys know the news by now. He was cut by the Chiefs yesterday. I don't know what his future holds. I think everybody in Kansas City wishes him well. I think there's a different view on him. It's sad that like it takes stuff like that, but it's just the reality of the business that whatever your view is on him football-wise, I think people have a different view on him as a whole because of how open he's been about the off-the-field struggles that he's been going through. Clearly, the organization
loves him.
Did him
as a teammate. You know,
did right by him, to say the least, by holding him on the roster as long as they did when they knew he wasn't going to play this year, be available to play this year due to the mental health challenges that he's been open about. And I think what happened ultimately was a roster crunch. Probably the Browns coming back. Some other areas, at some point you reach a limit of like how much you can continue to have a guy on the roster that you just know is not going to ever be active for you on game day. But clearly the locker room, the locker room and everybody loved the guy. And I think he will have a much different legacy in Kansas City than how people were talking about him after year one. Because after year one, he was a first round pick and he had, 1,200 yards from scrimmage and everybody was excited, but people were still almost still expecting more. And then the rookie year was the best we ever saw from him. I think he was never the same player after the ankle injury in that New Orleans Saints game. He just never came back. Plus, perhaps we now know was dealing with some stuff
some
off
other
the field
medical stuff,
as well. I don't know if he plays in the league again. I'm not sure. How do you view him, though? Because I will never forget the opening game against the Texans. The reason why I will never forget it, one, because he played great. And everybody's like, oh my gosh, it was Sunday Night Football. And he bursts onto the scene here? Like, here they go again. And you guys know I collect trading cards, and I had a rookie Clyde Edwards-Helaire autograph, like LSU card. And I don't know if I talked about it on the air with you. I know we were texting. Maybe we talked about, like, do I sell this thing now or hold on to it? It's a rookie card. It's an LSU uniform one, so they don't hold their value. And I think I sold it at that time for like $160. And I was like, I don't know if I'm going to regret doing this. That was the high point. That was the high point
of
it.
Week one of the first game he ever played for the Chiefs was the best.
And now you probably can get that same card for, I don't know, like $5 or $10. My point of bringing that story up is, let's not forget like what we were saying about him the first 8 games of his career in Kansas City. Like he was living up to the hype, to the first round pick, the first 8 games. And unfortunately, it gradually kind of went down. Then he gets hurt. And then we all know, I mean, a lot of people didn't think he would have been on the team this year. They re-signed him in the offseason, but a lot of people thought he wasn't even going to be around. I think he's someone that people will be rooting for a long time. He's won multiple rings, 3, as a matter of fact, but he was clearly overdrafted. That's fair to say if we're just talking about the football.
Sure.
He was clearly overdrafted. That's not his fault he got drafted in the first round, but he should not have been a first round pick. They were comparing him to Brian Westbrook.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I mean, not us. That was Andy Reid's direct comp for CEH. Look, if you said, did the pick work? No. Is he a first-round bust? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's got like 2,000 total yards, career yards, as a guy they took 4 years ago in the first round. It did not work. There's no argument that it didn't work from a football field perspective, and this is why people will always tell you, don't take first-round running backs, all the normal stuff.
And it didn't help that in the same year, of course, you had Jonathan Taylor end up turning into one of the better backs in the league.
Like the pick again, after or whatever, and has remained one of the better backs.
Happens every year in the draft. It just so happens it was this player, this position.
Yeah, T. Higgins was the pick after that, and that would obviously have been a better pick. There were plenty of people who you could have taken instead of Clyde Edwards-Helaire. First-round picks always seem to go in this like special little category where you're like, well, here we go. Glenn Dorsey, yeah. What a nightmare. Jonathan Baldwin, where we just discuss them as these like players that never panned out. I kind of want to, and it's easy because like those are all football things, and he deserves from a football perspective to be lumped in with the rest of those. But I, with him in particular, and I had said this in a day in which you were out, because of the off-field stuff, I am always going to view it differently. One, because of the 3-time Super Bowl champion. So Glenn Dorsey don't have that in town. So no matter how big of a bust you were, you got to hold rings and do this stuff. And by all accounts, was the ultimate teammate, even in the face of a lot of severe adversity. But I don't, man, going back and listen to that Pivot podcast and all the stuff he was dealing with, for all I know, this was a pick that did make sense and would have worked fine. No, he wouldn't have been a superstar or anything like that, but would have worked fine for a 4-year run had he not suffered from PTSD, dealt with this additional stuff, and then like some of the stuff like the way he handled himself during the parade shooting or other stuff. I'm going to remember, this is going to be the most fondly I remember a first round bust ever by a mile because of the person. So like that part is weird. Because typically what happens is with first, this is where he's going to land in this category.
That's why you have to separate the two. I think, you know, there's the reality of the football side of things did not live up to the pick. But also I think as people got to know him more or whatever, people also are going to always kind of have that in the back of their mind about his career as well. And some of the things that he did in the community and obviously how open he was. And by him speaking about some of his challenges, I'm sure it did help some people. But yeah, on the football end. Look, I mean, his rookie year, he had 803 yards on the ground and almost 300 receiving. After that, he played in 10 games, and 15 games. I mean, he couldn't stay healthy. It was not the same running back after that ankle injury. It makes you wonder what if, and there's so many stories of that in the league, but what if that ankle injury doesn't happen? What kind of player is he? And then Isaiah Pacheco comes along in 2022, and it was pretty clear
He was the better
running back, or what was it, 2022, I think, when Pacheco. So he was clearly the better back at that point in time. And, you know, this particular season, though, I think the organization deserves also a ton of credit in a sport that can be absolutely brutal and cutthroat. Yeah. A lot of teams would just cut him at training camp, would have said, okay, I mean, we're sympathetic, but you're not playing for us. We can't hold a spot. They did. Because it tells you how much respect the locker room had for Clyde, that they held on to him till week 16. They did their damnedest to try to keep him on the roster all year. Ultimately, they ran into a roster crunch, it looks like.
And I apologize, he's a 2-time Super Bowl champion. He wasn't here for the first one. Gotcha. He'd come right after the first Super Bowl. But still, when you look through it, it's like, yeah, I mean, and honestly, let's just look back in retrospect. Do you know how this pick went bad? Like, because of all this stuff I said, like, I'll always remember Clyde fondly because multiple Super Bowl championships and because he's a good dude and all the things he did in Kansas City that I think were good for the city. I mean, I got to be honest. I'm not sure I couldn't have had 1,000 yards at LSU the year he played. Holy cow! That is the single most stacked offense in the history of college football.
Okay.
His two wide receivers were I'm obviously being hyperbolic.
He had three good ones.
Dude,
no, it was the most stacked roster ever.
But. Justin Jefferson and Jamar Chase.
And Terrence Marshall.
And Terrence, three NFL wide receivers. And Terrence Marshall was also being the beneficiary of, like, sucking up some of the lack of coverage because he shouldn't have been drafted or he was drafted either, obviously. And it turns out Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson might have been making coverage easier for you at your time at LSU. I don't blame them for the thought. For the same reason, I understand why they took Xavier Worthy this year. I want the Chiefs taking weapons around Patrick Mahomes. Yes, I want a good offensive line. Yes, I want defensive linemen. But every 2, 3, 4 years, when you're in the first round, it shouldn't just be, here comes another defensive end. Here, it should be a wide receiver sometimes. It should be maybe in the second round a high-level running back that you think fondly of because those guys get turned and burned a lot in this league. And having an elite-level back, you see what it does for Jared Goff. You see what having Gibbs and Montgomery did for him the entire year. Having a good offensive line does. I got the idea at the time, but obviously they got the wrong back. Had they gotten Jonathan Taylor? You know, I don't know. Maybe
It's one of those, like, would Jonathan Taylor be getting the workload he got in Indianapolis because we how many times we have the run the ball more segment and all that. I think Jonathan Taylor, obviously, receiving back-wise would have been interesting in this offense. Look, they thought he was going to be, you know, Brian Westbrook. That was the audio that we played the day after Clyde was drafted. We also had the audio where they claim, you know, Patrick Mahomes. Remember the Andy Reid audio where he's like, Clyde, Patrick chose you or whatever. Remember that whole thing that was a big deal at the time?
Oh, yeah.
I remember doing that show.
Pat should not be the GM, I guess, if that was what really happened.
Yeah. I mean, again, as we discussed it, it's one of those where Brett Veach said, hey, we're going to take this guy. What do you think? And Pat's probably like, yeah, go take him. I want him.
Sounds cool to me.
So that's, you know, it's a great story. It sounds like it becomes a great story. That was at the time. I think we were doing shows from your basement at the time. I think I recall doing that draft, post-draft show. That was back right after. That was COVID.
Yeah. That was
a COVID draft, wasn't it? That's the other thing about his career. Like, wasn't that the COVID draft, him and Willie Gay Jr., the same draft class?
2020?
Yeah.
I think it was the COVID year.
Not Veach's finest draft. Where does Clyde rank amongst his worst picks?
Not at the top, though.
Well, he's still behind Breland Speech.
Yeah, I mean, he's a first-round pick, so that automatically is going to elevate you. You know.
To this point of his career, he's been more, I guess, quote-unquote, productive than Felix Anudike-Uzomah. I know the jury's still out, obviously, on that.
I just want it for the record.
More productive.
For the record, I want it to be said. I didn't say that. Okay? Well,
but there's no lie. Maybe
I didn't
say
that.
That's not a lie.
No, there's not.
I'm not saying I don't believe it. I'm just saying I didn't
right now,
say it.
Right now.
Yeah, no, I mean.
Right now, I don't think you can say that that's a bad. That's not Breland a bad
speaks
take.
Breland Speaks will always be at the top of the list.
Yeah, he didn't make it to like 2 years.
It's too early to tell on Kingsley. Doesn't look great. Kingsley wasn't a first round pick. If we're just talking about only first round picks or all time picks.
No, just all time. Kingsley's.
He'll be in the conversation depending on where things trend. It's too early to completely write him off.
Yeah. As of right now, I think it would fairly easily be. I think he'd probably be like in the top 5 at worst. And that's partially just because of like how high he was taken. Top 3 at worst. Right now, the competition outside of Breland Speaks, which was his first year as a GM, so I really don't care. Kingsley and Felix feel like they could enter this conversation.
I will say, it can't be the worst pick when, if you're going to say the guy that you had in Brett Veach tenure, someone's texting in Todd Blackledge. We're not talking about an all-time Chiefs history. We're talking about under Brett Veach.
he's just a baby, an infant baby. Blackledge.
With Clyde, like, definitely can't be the worst one when in your rookie year you had 1,300 yards and you were part of 2 Super Bowl teams. Yeah. You know what I mean?
What about Sky Moore? He was on 2 Super Bowl teams, too.
Yeah. That's insulting to Clyde to suggest that his production was anywhere what they've gotten out of Sky.
No.
Clyde is much
Clyde's
more productive.
Clyde's production way better than what they got
Sky's
out of Sky.
Worse. That's what I'm saying. Sky's a worse pick.
And I understand he wasn't a first-round pick, but
it's
way
close
worse.
Enough. He's 15 picks later.
That was clearly a way... No, that's my point, is that Clyde can't be at the top of the list when he gave you 1,300 yards his rookie year and was part of 2 Super Bowl championship teams.
Yeah, I agree. Sky also has 2 Super Bowl wins.
No, but...
Yeah, I know.
The production part.
I know.
We just can't ignore that? Like, holy crap.
If you look at all the picks, I don't even know if you could say he's in the 5 worst. If you look at all seven rounds.
Hey, the they also like had the one pick that didn't even make it out of training camp.
Yeah, but the problem is, like, I'm never going to rank him below Darian Kennard.
Well, and Kennard, too. That's another one.
Like, I'm never going to rank him below, like, dudes who got taken in the seventh round. Those are just... Sure. Those are, like, if we're talking worst picks of all time, I think we can all agree that it has to occur in the first three rounds. Like, it has to be, like, for John Dorsey, one of the worst picks he ever made was Kavari Russell. Even though it was a third round pick, he didn't make it through training camp.
That's who I was saying, but that was a Dorsey pick. That's who I was thinking of, too. Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
When you start making picks that don't make it through training camp, we're having a slightly different conversation if it goes in that. But yeah, someone was like, someone was trying to get mad at me for that initial Felix take from Drew. I don't want to, like, point this out. And I actually still have some hope. I told Gold this before the show. Because I think I've gotten a reputation on this show for being anti-Felix and Udika Uzama.
Anti-K-State.
And anti-K-State.
Definitely anti-K-State. Definitely anti-K-State.
Okay, I will admit, I did not like the pick coming out of the draft. I made that very clear from the second that they drafted him. And to this point, I don't think I've been proven wrong. That was it. I would also still think that I don't think it's crazy that Felix Anudike Uzama could still turn into a productive NFL player.
I think we all think that,
though. The way that Turk Wharton turned into a productive NFL player. Would I call him that right now? I would not.
No. My issue when we've ever discussed these players, I think sometimes you are very quick
to bury
someone after, like, six games in and be like, well, just done.
I know, but...
And it doesn't mean that ultimately the opinion is wrong at the end. I just don't think... with certain players, even if they're first round pick, especially linemen, on a team that's trying to repeat or go for a three-peat where you have clearly starters, you're gonna prioritize guys that can help you immediately over that. It's not there's not a runway that you have maybe on for that particular season. I think sometimes you call a pick over, like, we already know how they are six games into their career, and sometimes that is who the player is. Very true.
Somebody said McCall Hardman.
I mean, Cole's turned out to be fine because
has he been more productive than Clyde has just career-wise?
Yes, he has. Quite a bit more productive. Maybe twice as productive, I would say, and has just as many rings. But I just I'm not disagreeing with you that sometimes I'm a little early. But I think sometimes we're afraid to admit that there are occasionally players, I think there's like one a year across, there's like 10 a year across the NFL, when you just know that ain't it. Like, I don't know what you were thinking there, but we can all, like, with Sky Moore, I thought right away you'd be like, man, I don't see it.
Yeah, but all training camp, everybody was, you couldn't have been, not you, just people couldn't have been gloating more about Sky Moore in his first training camp. Remember, like, it was, we had the interview with him. I remember we were at camp and everybody's talking about how amazing he looked on the football field at camp. And then, of course, so we've done it on the opposite side as well. Anyway, we'll get back to this, I'm sure, coming up later on in the show. Up next, though, let's welcome in our NFL insider, Vinny Pasquantino. We'll ask him about week 14, 15, heading into week 16 now of the NFL season. And how was the Bobby Wood Jr. wedding over the weekend?
He's had songs written about him without asking for it.
Pasquantino, I want it. Now it's time for Pasquantino.
Mythological creatures and sandwiches have been named after him.
Beefy and Italian.
And he also thought the Davante Adams trade was going to save the Jets.
The damn Jets.
Welcome back to the show, our NFL insider, Vinny Pasquantino.
All right, it is that time of the week where we do check in with our NFL insider, Vinny Pasquantino. Happy anniversary. First of all, I must say the sleigh ride through the snow is a nice touch, man. Was that planned by you? That was very nice.
Yep, that was planned by me. Did it all on my own. Talked with the concierge a little bit at the hotel, see what was popping out here, and that was recommended. So I'm not allowed to ski, obviously. It's like number one in the contract is no skiing. So, but I can get on a sleigh. So that's what I did.
I'm not gonna lie, that looks super romantic, Vinny. That feel like it earned you a lot of points.
Yeah, it's what I do. I'm a romantic at heart. had a nice dinner last night too. So yeah. Brownie points galore for me this week.
I don't think I've ever asked. There's no reason why I would have, but now you're talking about being a romantic. How did you propose?
I proposed at Loose Park.
Okay.
On the bridge.
That's a classic spot, man. Classic Kansas City spot.
Yep. So we're just Kansas City, it's Kansas City people.
Now,
that's where we got engaged, so it's great.
So I don't know. Like, it seemed like maybe it was a no photos with cell phones wedding because I didn't see a single shirtless photo.
That's because I did not bring my phone down there. There is a picture though. And if it turns out as good as I think it will, let's just say there's a, there's a lot of people in that photo.
Okay. So
wow. When are you going to release it? I can't be teased with this kind of information.
I don't know. I don't know when the wedding photos are going to come out. I mean, the wedding was in like 7 different national magazines, so there's so many different photographers that were there.
Yeah, did you not have exclusive people photos for your wedding too? Is that wasn't the case?
No. That is the difference between being a superstar baseball player and a decent baseball player right there, folks. That is the difference, biggest one.
Yeah, the other part though we noticed was there was Whataburger, like a pop up Whataburger, and like Whataburger though, they made like a pop up restaurant.
Yep, pop up restaurant. Never seen that at a wedding before. Yeah, it was a Whataburger.
I just hope that was it Jack or James, whoever DM'd you last week? I hope he's happy there has not a shirtless photo out there yet, as Cody said.
Yeah, no, Jack is because I'm just a jerk. I thought about DMing him and being like, "Hey, man, is it okay if I post some photos from the wedding?" Just like, is that okay with you, Jack, or should I just post photos like at the gym or something? Well, I don't know what he wants from me, but I decided to just stay away from it. It's probably not a good thing to do that, but I wanted to.
It gets tempting, I'm sure. I'd be tempted. I'm not gonna lie.
I think about Jack way too often these days. If I'm being completely honest, the past 2 weeks he's just been living rent free in my head.
Well, I guess Jack got what he want with that one, maybe. Yeah. But you'll move on. Baseball will take hold here in February, so you'll be all right. Yep. Plus, we got NFL playoff time coming around the corner here in no time, which means we'll get your power rankings here in just a minute. But I want to ask you about a couple of the big dogs in the NFC. The Eagles and the Lions. Obviously, the Eagles continue to look good. The Lions lost even more players. Are you worried about the Lions' ability to kind of like last with all these injuries?
Yeah, I am. It's just the tough nature of sports. It's just like injuries can ruin a team. You build your team to be with certain people, especially in football, certain schemes, different things that guys can do. And when you lose that many people, that's terrifying. Now, the good thing is just they're still putting up points. So you can score points. That helps you. But, yeah, it's tough. They've dropped in my power rankings. So there's your spoiler. Not far, but they've dropped.
Meanwhile, it was, of course, Buffalo who beat them, and their offense continues to put up a ridiculous amount of points. Their defense, though, has given up 86 points the last couple weeks. Where do you view Buffalo right now? I know, as Cody said, the rankings we'll get to in a second, but just Josh Allen, a lot of people think the MVP is completely over now.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're really good, but I think they've got a defensive coach. Don't you think it'd be weird if you had an offensive coach and you had won 2 straight games, like 6-3?
Yes.
Like, I think there would be a completely different narrative out there. Like, obviously, they're a really good team. But that's at some point, the dam's going to break if you keep giving up 40-plus a game, even if you can score 40-plus. Probably not going to be able to do it all the time.
I guess, where are you on QB wins as a stat? Do you attribute those to actual quarterbacks? Is more the team sport thing? Where do you stand on, like, hey, they get the wins, so that counts?
I don't know. I just look at actual wins and losses. I think it's probably a tricky thing, because if your defense gives up a bunch of points, but I don't know. That's why I think MVP awards are weird too, because what does it mean? Do you want to just give it to the best player on the best team? Like, I don't know. I just don't really have a strong opinion on it, because it's like in hockey, don't goalies get wins and losses? Like,
yeah.
What if your team doesn't score? What are you supposed to do? So, I don't know. I don't have a strong enough opinion to really speak on it.
Or in Josh Allen's case last week, score 40 and then not get the win, right?
Yeah, but then you look at things that they did in that game, and it's like, why did they QB sneak when they had their 3 times? Like, even though that's called in, isn't that kind of his fault for running that play? I'm sure he has the freedom to change it if he really wants to. So, obviously, there's no guarantee they're going to win that game, but still, you look at little things like that, and it's like, that's tough.
We're talking to our NFL insider, Vinny Pasquantino. I'm sure you're wondering, we've avoided the subject for a second. There's not been a lot of times we've had you on the show when the Jets are coming off of a victory. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about the Jets.
We're back. 2026, or what year is next year? 2025, we're back. You got to bring him back. You got to bring Devontae back. You got to find a way, because I don't know if you're drafting a quarterback. I don't think Sam Darnold's coming. So we're in for another probably 6-win season next year, but it's really exciting. Really, really exciting. They're playing one of the worst teams in the league, and they looked really good.
Devontae Adams is still really good.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, you have Garrett Wilson on the other side too. Like it helps just, it helps both of them. It's just, I don't know. Their defense also gave up a bunch of points to Mac Jones. No offense to Mac Jones, but he hasn't really proven he can put up a lot of points. So the Jets defense is surprisingly, for me, surprisingly awful, which sucks, but the offense looks pretty good lately. Pass protection's pretty good. They don't run the ball worth crap, but when Rodgers looks like that, they can win, you know, they can win games. They scored more than 30 points for the first time all year.
The Chiefs have only done that once, so don't feel bad. But since when you look at, and I want to ask you a couple of Chiefs-related questions here in just a second, but first, it seems like we're talking Jets and the documentary comes out today. Are you watching that Aaron Rodgers documentary today?
No, I will not be watching that. He's the quarterback of my team, but he's not a friend of mine, so I'm not really going to watch his documentary on him going to Costa Rica and doing ayahuasca. Not my cup of tea. But okay. For those that it is, happy for you.
What's on Netflix these days for you?
I've been watching The Blacklist a lot. I'm almost done with it. I've got 4 episodes left. I've got to find a new show after that. So I like shows that have a ton of seasons that I can just dive into.
There's a Hallmark movie you should watch, Vinny. I don't know if you've heard. That's right. Yeah. My car is in it for about 2 seconds. My side of my face for about a half second. Chiefs Hallmark movie. Yeah. You should definitely watch it. The wife will love that.
Yeah. Okay.
Feels like a maybe.
Cody mentioned the Chiefs, though. How many times we've had you on the show, we've been talking about Patrick Mahomes having an ankle injury, and we've reached that point in the time of the season where, unfortunately, he once again has an ankle injury, and that's the number one story in Kansas City, as you can imagine, this week is he going to play Saturday? Should he play? What's the recovery like? As someone that has had injuries, I'm not asking you to exactly deal with his particular injury, but just how do you see this week playing out as any athlete that's trying to rehab from something and knowing that there's the balance of protecting yourself, but also I'm sure he, of course, wants to be out there on Saturday?
I don't know. I don't think there is such a thing as protecting yourself as an athlete. That's on the trainers and the coaching staff to do that. Like if I think I can go, I'm going to go. And if I don't think I can go, like I'm basically on my deathbed. And I'm saying I'm like, that's the general consensus. Except for the linebacker for the 49ers. But I mean, that's kind of your job. Like, you get paid to go out there and do your thing as best as you can. And a lot of times you're not 100% healthy, especially at this part of the year in football. Like, for us, you know, once you hit, like, July, August, September, like, nobody's 100% healthy. Obviously, this is a strange case for the Chiefs because the one seed is all but locked up. What, do you got to win 2 games to automatically get the one seed?
Yes.
Or if the Bills lose one and right, you guys win one. So I don't know. It probably depends on the severity of it, of what they feel like they can, you know, do they feel like, I mean, it's tough 3 games. Maybe they don't necessarily want to put them out there and show those teams that they might be playing soon what the team looks like. I don't know if there's any sort of gamesmanship or strategy to that, but he's going to be doing whatever he can to be on the field.
Somebody, by the way, on the text line is warning you're going to hate the ending of The Blacklist. So I'm just preparing you now. I don't know. They're warning. They're warning that the finale might not be good. What is, I guess, like you had an injury and certainly like the dynamics between different players. But like, let's just say Bobby said, I'm playing because he's Patrick Mahomes, right? Like the level of player and the dynamic between it. Can a coaching staff, does anyone ever really stand in the way of a player like that if Mahomes is like, I'm playing, I don't really care what you say?
Do you think Bobby played 161 last year because the coaching staff wanted him to play 161?
No, he's just like, I'm playing and you can't take me out.
Yeah, he DH'd once. You look at Sal as well. You look at guys like that, like, there's a reason they're out there as much as they are, right? It's because that's their job. They know it. It's what they think, like, it's what they are good at, is being out there every day. Not the argument I can make because I get hurt every year, apparently, which I'm working on, by the way, working on trying to figure out how to stop that. But like, those guys don't want days. It doesn't, in their minds, it doesn't make them better to have a day off, because sometimes days off are more stressful than days on because you're not sure if you should get ready for the game at what certain point. So like, for them, just staying in that everyday routine is better for them. And sometimes that's probably tough on coaching staffs, but that's the job of the player, is to make the coach's job hard because you're ready to go every single day.
All right, here comes the music. A little power ranking from Vinny Pasquantino. Okay. Let's hear the top 5 latest power rankings heading into Week 16.
The Chiefs are number 1. The Eagles are number 2. The Bills are number 3. The Lions are number four. And I, to be honest, those are my four. There's a whole bunch of teams that could be five. Like, I think the Steelers are still pretty good. I know they got beat. I guess I'm going to go with the Vikings at five, with the Packers being five, six. That's where I'm going to go. That division's really good. The NFC North?
Yeah, that's crazy.
I keep wanting to call it the NL Central, but that's not what it's called.
Right.
NFC North.
So Chiefs, Bills, Eagles, Lions, Packers?
Yeah, that's what I'm going to go with. But also, this just reminded me, I've been doing this show for, this is my third year doing the show, right?
Yeah.
The Chiefs have won two Super Bowls. Like, I don't know if anybody's ever connected those dots, but I just want to let you know that that's just a fact. So you're welcome, Kansas City.
That's a great point. I hadn't thought about the connection. Alex and I pointed out a bunch of times, we have been to three Chiefs Super Bowls. They've won all three. The only one we didn't go to was Tampa Bay. You know, so.
Well, you guys will have fun in Louisiana this year, down in New Orleans.
We've already joked with the boss. We're like, hey, if they make it, we don't go. Just, it's on you. It's on you if this team doesn't three-peat. So the boss is well aware of that. That's true. I guess, Vinny, as long as the Chiefs keep winning Super Bowls, then you obviously got to keep staying on as our NFL insider. Last one for you, though, just heading into the final couple weeks of the season, do you have, out of these perceived wild card teams, you know, on the AFC, it's going to be the Broncos and Chargers as two of them. We'll see NFC. Maybe it's the Commanders, something like that. Is there any outside of your top five that you could see making a run during the postseason as things stand right now?
Well, I think the out of the AFC, probably the Broncos. The Chargers, have they beaten anybody good?
No.
No offense, not to be hot takey sports radio, but they haven't really beaten anybody good. The Broncos seem like they're probably the best poised to make a run out of one of those spots, just because seems like Bo Nix is playing pretty good. Their defense is pretty good. And I only say their defense is good because Pat Surtain's like the best corner in the league. And that's my only evidence that their defense is good. Haven't seen a whole lot of Broncos football this year, but they have Pat Surtain. He's a very good football player. So I'm going to go with them in the AFC. And then in the NFC, I'm going to go with my Packers. They run the ball, and I like Josh Jacobs quite a bit.
That's a good choice. I think the Packers are a sneaky NFC
title
game.
The Lions are kind of in trouble. They're so banged up, and they could get the 5 seed. Like, not to bring up old stuff, but you don't want Jared Goff playing outside in the cold.
No, it's a fair point. That has absolutely been discussed. They've played so many of their games indoors, even just the way that whole division has multiple games, obviously, between the Vikings and Lions, where they're already playing indoors. So the Lions team is only – what is it? Somebody put out the stat, Cody. What is it? The Lions only playing outdoors like four times, five times, something like that, this entire season? It's crazy.
Yeah, especially with David Montgomery going down. That hurts their run game a bit. You want to stay inside if you're them.
All right, Vinny, we appreciate it, man. Enjoy the weekend, and it sounds like maybe you finally have a weekend to relax a little bit after all this traveling. So.
No, it is go time in terms of getting ready for the season now. When I get home tomorrow night, it is officially go time. Are we doing this next Tuesday? It's Christmas Eve, huh?
Christmas Eve, we're off. Do you want to come on Monday instead?
I'm really more of a Tuesday guy, but I guess I can do Monday.
We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. Thanks, man.
All right, see you guys.
There you go. It's Vinny Pasquantino, our NFL insider. Maybe he'll join us next Monday. We'll see. But yes, next week, Chiefs, of course, are playing on Christmas Day, which is Wednesday, and we're all off a little bit, off and on, over the next couple of weeks due to the holidays. So it's that time. It's kind of that time of the year, right, where everybody's trying to navigate their holiday schedules and everything.
I think the Bobby Wood Jr. thing is very real. Mm-hmm. When it comes to, like, if Patrick Mahomes on Friday says, I don't care what you say, I am playing.
Awfully hard to not have him play.
Very difficult. But look, I also understand, like, Carrington had a doctor on yesterday on his show, and she was talking a little bit about the injury and the possibility of the offseason surgery and all this stuff, Gold. And there's part of me that wonders that same thing, which is the long-term lower leg injuries at some point you have to fear pile up, do you not? Like, at some point,
I heard the same interview. There's going to be a
little bit worried.
So it was Dr. Jesse Morse. If you're on social media, you see him. I think he's specifically kind of covered more NFL injuries since 2017, but he's been a doctor for 25 years or something, I believe he said. He was on with CDOT yesterday. And I also heard him say, though, that he didn't think the sitting him out wouldn't necessarily lead to, like, he said this is like something he's gonna be doing for another 5 or 6 months. Like, he's not gonna feel right for 5 or 6 months, meaning that if you think that by him sitting 2 weeks he's suddenly gonna be way more mobile again, he kind of pushed back on that a little bit.
there's obviously a re-injury risk. But if you just think like, oh, if he sits two games, he's just going to be way more mobile. And he might have more. He might have more confidence in his ankle. But ultimately, it's still going to be a problem. Like we remember this from a couple years ago, where 1 year Mahomes had to have a little operation, a procedure done in the offseason. Yeah, the other years, it took until like April or May for him to actually feel right. So I don't. This isn't like if you're a logic. My thing was sitting him on Saturday.
Mine is just like, how many of these lower leg things can you suffer before it's a real problem? Like you have to have serious surgery, not like a cleanup.
Yeah, I mean and I don't know what the exact procedure was a couple years ago. The same doctor though, also with Carrington yesterday. You should listen to the full interview. It's up on the Odyssey app. Mentioned that a lot of athletes. This is what he said. I trust him on this. He said a lot of athletes are a little cautious on getting surgery on the ankle because while they might have more confidence in it, their mobility is less. Like the ankle doesn't do what it's usually used to doing, even after a procedure, and therefore can cause other injuries because other parts of your body are whether it's more stress on or whatever. Listen to the full interview. I'm paraphrasing what he said, but
sure.
I thought that was kind of interesting. About it is.
And like, I understand that. Like I understand the fear to like, limit yourself in that day. But like at some point, if I'm the Chiefs, the only thing that would be brought up with this, and this is why I would say, like, once again, the entire offseason is about fixing the offensive line. He's now suffered a relatively high number of lower leg injuries. 3 times with the ankle, 1 time with the knee. Like it's always players in and around his legs. And while I think that there's probably no quarterback in the league more qualified to play with an ankle injury than Patrick Mahomes at this point. Like, I do think at some point you got to start being like, I can't keep letting his ankles get hit like this.
This is what the Dr. Jesse Moore said with CDI yesterday. Does he think Mahomes will actually play on Saturday?
I know his history well. I don't know him personally, but I study NFL players and injuries. I've been doing this since 2017. So there's certain guys that you will have to chop off their leg to get them out of the field. And this is one of those guys. They're in a good position right now, so maybe they say, hey, no, we're going to have you take off this week. But if it's up to him, he's going to play. That's just who he is. That's just the caliber of competitiveness he has. He has never missed a game due to an ankle injury, and this is number 6. So if history is any indicator, he will play through this like he has the others.
The only difference, of course, is they're in the middle of a 3-game and 11-day stretch. Otherwise, that's pretty notable. 6 ankle injuries, and he hasn't missed a game because of it.
I mean, it doesn't. Stats don't lie on that one, right? He's had that many, and he's never missed a game. And it's not like, and I would say, like, this isn't like, I don't think he'd play if the Wednesday game was this week, right? If it was Saturday to win. Like, if he got hurt on Saturday, he's not playing Wednesday.
Right.
And I know it's a short week. It's a day. It's a day. It's not a short week, really. The next one, that's short. I'm not saying one day's not nothing for NFL healing perspective. But it's not this massive difference, this 24 hours hypothetical, or not even hypothetical, the 24 hours. The 3 days after, my concern is if you get rolled up there once, you are just cashing the ticket that says you're not playing Wednesday. And now 10 days after that, you're going to get plenty of rest. So if you can get through, this is always the challenge. If you can get through the 2 games in 4 days scenario, well, then you get 10 days to ice, elevate, rest, do whatever before you get Denver. Yeah. And that game might not matter.
Now, this was what Dr. Jesse Moore said about the offseason and what you were alluding to, more the longer-term stuff.
Now, Mahomes, unfortunately, is no stranger to this injury. He's had this several times before. He had a left one in 2019. He had the right one, which is what he suffered this time. If you remember, late in the playoffs in 23, it was a grade 2, so worse than he's currently dealing with. He powered through that, and then he suffered that re-injury, if you remember, in the Super Bowl 2 years ago when he was hobbling like crazy. He reportedly avoided surgery, which is part of the reason probably he ended up suffering at this time, because if you do surgery on this, usually they put a tightrope procedure where they basically cinch it together and they put a screw through it, but it also makes it a lot harder to re-injure. So he had a couple ankle sprains earlier this year, predominantly on the inside of the left ankle, but unfortunately this one was a high ankle to the right that they confirmed last night.
The other part
is a background on what potentially could happen and what hasn't happened.
Sounds
and
awful. I guess the one argument for the surgery against is the same one he said before. If you've had an injury to your ankle 6 times and you've never missed a single game as a result of it, is it that big of a deal? Like,
Well, the fact that it's grade 1, he said grade 1 versus grade 2, he's played through a worse ankle injury than this one.
On shorter
notice. The only difference, again, in terms of availability,
is that you know what you're dealing with. You have a number one seed with the short turnaround Saturday to Wednesday. That's the difference. Otherwise, yeah, the numbers would show you, based off of how many times he had this injury, that he's going to find a way to play on Saturday. That him playing on Saturday is different than the conversation, if some people want to have it like we did yesterday, which is, should he play? There's the difference. And I heard Damon Hughes this morning talking with Bob about it. I know Mitch Holt this last night, Chiefs Kingdom show, and was discussing it as well. Like, if Mahomes wants to play, basically, and can play, he's going to play, kind of thing. And the numbers back that up.
Yeah. And I mean, that's always goes back to the same thing, which is that. But I would, if I'm the Chiefs, the long-term thing is, like, I want Patrick Mahomes to play at least 42. And if his ankles are busted up every year, like, at some point, that feels like a challenge. I actually want him to play till he's like 50, but I felt like 42 is a more reasonable ask.
Up next, though, let's talk more about this with Nate Taylor, our Chiefs insider. We'll get the thoughts from him. What is he hearing about Patrick Mahomes? And is DJ Humphries available Saturday? And if he is, does that mean Joe Tooney's automatically going back to left guard? That's coming up next.